All right, my next guest tonight is a friend of mine. He covered the Nationals when I was back in D.C. for a number of years for the Washington Post. Now, he's a big deal. He's a New York Times reporter. He just covered the WBC. He used to cover the Mets and the Yankees, but now he's a national guy. I didn't even know he had time to come on our show. He's such a big deal. James Wagner joins the show. James, how you doing?
Good, good. Thank you very much for having me. Plenty of time now that the WBC is over, so that should not be a fear, but... good to hear from you, and then good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's great to hear your voice, man. So I guess we recap the WBC. I said last night on the show, James, that, if you'd have scripted it like that and you would have sent it to a Hollywood producer and said, hey, it's going to be Ohtani versus Trout, a one-run game in the ninth with two outs, they're teammates. It's one of the best players on the planet against one of the best hitters on the planet. I said the Hollywood producer would have handed me the script back and say, that never happens. I mean, just talk about how great that whole tournament was in general, how it's hooked a lot of people. And I think last night was a huge exclamation point for baseball.
Yeah, I mean, like I was joking with some people after yesterday's game. So it was like, what sign did you give Mookie to hit into a double play to make sure that Trout came up as the last out? It was just like the odds of that, like, you know, as you know, like there's nine hitters in a lineup. If that turns over, like the odds that it would end with the two teammates, basically the two biggest players in baseball, it's fate. Like, it's funny how fate works, and that's the way it had to end. But almost like poetic, you know, like to finally win the title, you have to go the best faces the best. And that's like kind of how you won it. And it's so dramatic. It's so cool to see, whether you're a fan of either country or just a fan of baseball, period. And I think the manager of the Mexican team when they lost the other day to Japan, Benji Gill, said it best. It's like, you know, Japan advances, but baseball won tonight. And I guess that's the sense. Like, you're a fan of the United States. Your team lost, but you got to see something really, really fascinating, really cool for the sport. And also that sweeping slider was incredible after he was pumping 100 at him to strike out his teammate. But, yeah, I mean, the whole tournament, I think I saw it was like the attendance at 1.3 million. I think three of the four most watched games were during this WBC. They were all Japan games. So I think you hear stories of like 60-some percent of Puerto Rico watching the games too, and the island basically almost shutting down for those hours whenever they played. You saw how much Mexico got involved, a huge spike in their ratings, given how deep they went. I think it's just, you know, the tournament was only in its fifth edition. You know, it started in 2006, supposed to be every 4 years. So it's still, gaining fans. But in that sense, I think people really do love cheering for their country, not just superstar players. It's kind of like an all-star game on steroids, you know, where it's like all the all-stars you'd ever dream about in your country, basically not all of them, most of them, all on one team and representing your flag. I think there's a different level of excitement. And I think passion, I think, when you are cheering for your country, not just an arbitrary team like the Yankees or the Angels, for example.
Yeah, it was really cool. I got into it. I have never been into it as much as I was this year, and I just think it's only going to get bigger and better as time goes by. I did not know, James, that Shohei Ohtani, for lack of a better term, was such a badass. I mean, like, literally, this was, like, for me personally, my biggest exposure to him as a player. And I've heard how great he is, and I've watched him in home run derbies, and I've seen a few Angels games here and there. But all of a sudden, I'm watching a guy jog down to the bullpen, jog back to come and hit. I'm watching a guy close the championship game. I watched him hit a ball 116 miles an hour last night. I watched him throw a pitch 100 miles an hour last night. Like, all of a sudden, I don't know what his value is on the open market, but I feel like it went way up last night.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't hurt it. Like, I mean, obviously, whatever team signs him isn't signing him with the WBC title in mind. But, like, yes, I think it was just a total overall performance. I think people can see, if they didn't already know, that he is also – he's not just got a powerful right arm and a powerful left-handed swing, but he is fast. I mean, look at, like, I think that whole sequence in the seventh inning, him beating out that throw from Trey Turner at first base for the infield single, getting his uniform dirty, going out immediately after that inning was over, going out to the bullpen in left field, warming up. And I thought the coolest moment was him taking the mound with his dirty pants. You know, like, pitchers entering the game aren't dirty already, you know, but his pants were dirty because he was sliding and running around, taking the mound to do that, and then pumping 102 to Jeff McNeil. It's just, you don't see, it's a unicorn. He's a unicorn. Like, no one has done this before, not even Babe Ruth at this level for an entire season just this all-around performance. So watching him do that and basically carry his team for seven straight wins, was fascinating, especially to see how, you know, he loosened up too. He was so, some of his answers yesterday after the game was over, just showed how much emotion, how much he cared. He usually doesn't show that much. And like, or a few games ago when he doubled to kind of start the rally against Mexico, he was pumping his fist, yelling, "Let's go," towards his teammates, you know, knocking off his helmet. Like, you don't see that passion when he's playing for the Angels, maybe because they're not playing in meaningful games, but also just how much it mattered to him.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville?
Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though. So I mean, that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Talking to James Wagner, New York Times a reporter, now in a national role covering baseball for the New York Times. Nice enough to join us tonight. So as a free agent, I was saying this last night on the show, like, he's a frontline pitcher and a frontline hitter. So, I mean, he could be a $600 million. He's two $30 million players to me. He's a $30 million hitter. He's a $30 million pitcher. I mean, I don't know what the market commands for him next year. Maybe that's going a little overboard. But you're getting an ace, and you're getting a three or four hitter that could hit 40 or 50 home runs. So whoever signs him is really going to have to pay. I mean, this could be the biggest contract in the history of baseball.
It could be, and like I think, but there's certain caveats I think to keep in mind. Like, I don't know. I haven't really pulled his agent or other agents or GMs yet. But, like, yeah, I mean, he could be the biggest contract. He also could – I mean, I guess the obvious caveats, like I was mentioning, are like, you know, how long is he going to be able to be a two-way player? You know, he's – 28 years old now. He appeared 29 in July. So, like, you know, I mean, how long can this give him? So you give him an 8-year deal, like 9-year deal, 10-year deal. Like, how, what's his body going to look like then? I mean, like, everyone, you ask that about every free agent, but they're usually just one player. You know, they're just a hitter or a position player or a pitcher. What's it going to look like when he's doing the double wear and tear of both? And obviously, like, he claims, you know, and he's claimed to be a better player because he does both. He's very meticulous. He loves the routine of pitching and hitting. If not, he would probably go insane not being able to plan for either of them, like, in between starts and in between games. So I think it's part of his ethos, and that's why he wanted to sign with the Angels in the first place. They allowed him the ability to do this way. But I think you have to keep that in mind. How often is he going to pitch? Is it every 5 days or every six, given, you know, the six-man rotation with him? I'm not saying he's not valuable for those reasons, but I think those are things to keep in mind. You know, whatever team's going to sign him, and he's probably going to want to – he obviously wants to keep doing the two-way thing, but for how long?
Yeah, and whoever signs him is going to be printing money. I mean, literally, the butts in the seats. I mean, that factor, marketability, yeah. Whatever market he goes to is going to sell out. Season ticket sales are going to go through the roof. I have a whole new appreciation for the guy. He's unbelievable. Talk about appreciation for a guy, James. You and I saw Trey Turner at a very young age. I got to see him win a World Series in 2019. But he's all grown up now, the $300 million man, coming through in the WBC. And I tweeted something out, the just a smart-ass tweet, a week or so ago, saying, why isn't Trey Turner playing tonight? Asking for a friend. I got a bunch of tweets back saying that Anderson was better than him. So he proved me right on my tweet. But just talk about Trey Turner from when you saw him back in D.C. into what he's evolved into right now, a $300 million man. He's going to have a monster season in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and just like the surrounding talent that he's got there, the Phillies front office made other big moves like Taijuan Walker and the moves they made last year, like to help solidify the extensions and the trades they made. Like, yeah, I think Philadelphia is like the NL East is going to be so tough between them, obviously, the Atlanta Braves and the New York Mets. Good luck. But Trey is just, I think what still impresses me is given his speed and his ability to run, obviously, his kind of wiry frame and play defense is just his power. Like, I guess I shouldn't be surprised by that by now, given how much I've watched him play. But it still surprises me. Like, he hit 5 home runs in this tournament, 7 games? just to see that, like every time I always forget, man, he's got fast hands. So like, I shouldn't be surprised. I shouldn't forget that. But I mean, I think what's so funny is that like, he even joked about it himself. He hadn't hit a home run in spring training because, you know, the WBC is during spring training. He hadn't hit one since 2019. I think it's been several years. And all of a sudden he popped five in a 2-week span. So it was, it's fascinating. And just looking at him, he's just, I think he is this, he's a different looking player. I mean, he's wiry, but fast and strong. And you don't really, I won't say unicorn, but that's a really unique skill set for a shortstop.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see him be successful and succeed. I mean, and to see him go to the Philadelphia, get to back east by his family, he's going to have a great year. And with the new rules, I mean, I'm watching teams steal bases left and right. I was in spring training for a couple of weeks. The running game is back in vogue. Athleticism is back in vogue. Range on defense is a commodity now all of a sudden. And what do you think, James, about the new rules, the rules changes, how it's been implemented? Successful. So if, I know you're going to have a social life this year, but you're not a beat writer anymore. If you were still a beat writer, you'd be getting out of there at 9 o'clock. I mean, this is nuts how quick these games are going all of a sudden.
Well, maybe not 9 o'clock, but maybe 9:30, yeah. 10. I wouldn't be leaving then, but the game would be over. And then, you know, but like 25 minutes on, you know, every night makes a difference. I think I heard someone joking that if they added it up, it might add up to three whole days by the end of the year. I don't know if that's true. I haven't done the math, but that's what someone was telling me that. But either way, like, yeah, I think it's not just the length of the games. And I think you could speak to this as a former fielder, like, you know, position player, infielder, like look at just the quality of the play. I think the speed of the play, like the action, like imagine like, you know, I always hear infielders complain, like standing around if a guy takes 30 seconds in between pitches to deliver, like, you'd get bored. Like, you're on your feet, you're standing around, you're milling about while you're waiting for him to deliver the next pitch and hit the ball and play. Like, this is like, just get it and go. And I think, you know, I think that's going to be a welcome change for both pitchers and position players too, just to get this thing going, stay on your feet, stay active, bounce around, rather than just like basically being stuck in cement between every pitch while the guy rears back, gets ready, adjusts his glove, his hat, touches himself, you know, whatever, you know, to get ready. So I think that, I think that in terms of not just length of the games, but the quality of the games, and also just, yeah, making more, like seeing more, there are too much, you know, the three true outcomes were rising too much overall in baseball. At least that's what, you know, that statistically is happening. Whether you like that or not is a different story. But strikeouts, home runs, and walks, action, you know, that's not really action. The ball's really not in play on the field when that happens. And those three true outcomes were happening more and more every year. So I think this gives a chance to provide more variety. The athleticism that we talked about defensively, see people run around, stolen bases, triples, whatever it might be. But, like, just more action in a way that we just hadn't seen, because hits were really becoming a premium. They were reaching record lows in recent years.
So when the guys are really going to like it is when it's 32 degrees and you don't have to stand on defense for a half hour, and when it's 97 degrees and you don't have to stand on defense for a half hour. I always thought severe weather games, whether it was cold or hot, and my pitcher's throwing balls and he's taking too much time, that would just drain you, stand on defense, or you'd freeze to death. So I don't think a lot of people have talked about the weather and the pitch clock, how I don't have to stand out in the outfield too long while a guy's, I don't know, stepping off the mound and grabbing the rosin after every single pitch. James, where can we read you next? What are you working on? What's the plan? What's your season looking like?
So I've got, you know, like I'm still down in Florida, maybe a few more spring training stories left and then opening day. But, yeah, you can still read us, at, you know, read me, not just me, but my colleagues at obviously the New York Times online and in the paper. But, yeah, and follow us online. But, yeah, so opening day and then after that, switching into a job where I get to cover sports internationally. So not just, you know, a lot of baseball, not just in the United States, but also in the Caribbean and Latin America, where some of the best players in the sport come from too.
Oh, good stuff, man. Well, I look forward to it. I can't thank you enough for taking some time out to come on the show tonight. It was great hearing your voice. Great catching up, and let's stay in touch.
For sure, man. Thank you very much for having me, and take care.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.